jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the fourth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of season 2017. My name's Marcus, and I'm back again this week with FB Donkey.
Episode 4 already, mate.
Yeah, it's certainly flying by these first few episodes. And this week, I think I've got a little bit more confidence in terms of who I'm actually looking to pick in the rucks. It's the ruck show this week. So hopefully it's a little bit of an easier show because we were just flooded with options last week. And I felt like the more we talked, the more confused I sort of got, Mark. I don't know about you, but looking forward to this ruck show.
Yeah, a lot of good midfield options. Even some of the mid-prices putting their hand up this weekend as well to just make it even more confusing. But, Rux, I'm glad that you're certain because I'm still a bit uncertain and hoping to learn something today.
We do have a special guest joining us for this episode, and he's joined us previously, I think, 2015. Kefa, welcome back to the show, mate. Very good to have you on.
Awesome. Thank you, Marcus and Mark. It's great to be here, and a big shout-out to everyone in the Supercoach Coach community.
Alrighty, we'll get straight into the show. Not any particular structure for this week. We're just basically going to run through all the options that we're considering. It's not a massive list. We haven't addressed sort of every single question we've got across social media. I think in the rucks, you only pick two players. So we're going to be quite targeted in terms of our selections and understand we might not potentially address some of the more niche options out there, but we'll also get into sort of general strategy about picking generally safer picks in the ruck. And before we jump into the show, just a reminder, supercoachcoach.com.au, when this podcast is posted on the podcast page, you can find the registration page for our ranked leagues, open league codes, the invite to our Supercoach Coach group, and you can also find the application for our Supercoach Coach Veterans group. And if you did want to discuss Supercoach at sort of that higher level, you can apply for that group there. We'll get into the show now. First one is from Scott Warwick. He was listening to another podcast and basically they were describing that because there's only sort of two options or two players selected in the rucks, that it's really the position to nail and get the best players in there rather than trying to search for value. So I just thought we'd start off this show by talking about maybe ruck strategy more generally before we actually get into the players. Mark, do you want to outline some of your thoughts about rucks? I think we generally have a pretty consistent strategy year to year when approaching the rucks.
Yeah, and that strategy is what they call set and forget, which is just pick your two best ruckmen and just leave them there for the rest of the year. And often doesn't work out like that in the rucks because ruckmen are probably more injury prone than any other position. So there can be some issues where you're going to end up having to trade a bit later on. I think if you look back to sort of when Dean Cox and Aaron Sandilands were dominating the competition, that's the prototype, is you just pick those two guys and just leave them dominate in the ruck for the rest of the year. I think that Scott makes some interesting points about just wanting to get the absolute two best, and he's definitely right there, where if there are two clear standout ruckmen, which often there can be, you really do want to be on both of them because you're losing significant points if you don't, whereas in the midfield there's often sort of there might be eight close to the top six, so you don't lose as many points. So yeah, I think that's definitely the basic strategy, is you want to pick the two that you think are going to average the highest and that are going to play 22 games. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be flexible if the right options come up, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, because there are a few sort of midfield options or even some rookie options this year that you might even want to put on the field and then just assess as the season goes on who is going to be the top two ruck. And I think that there might be some value to that doing that this season. What do you reckon, Kev?
Yeah, look, I tend to agree with you, Mark. I think that the set and forget strategy is probably a little bit of a hangover from the Cox and Sandilands era when they were really clear standouts. Goldie and Gawn probably look like they might be those standouts that year, but I'm not sure if it's that simple. I think the problem, if you want to call that, with the rucks is that, the gap between a ruckman's best year and his worst year is really, really high. And when I've been doing a little bit of research into most of the sort of relevant options, that's what I'm finding. And so there's a lot of guys this year that are priced well below their best footy, but, you know, that might have been 2 to 3 years ago. Whether they represent value or whether, you know, they're on a decline and you want to stay away from them, it's really a matter of you've got to make a prediction whether or not they can get back to that previous best. I'm talking about guys like Steph Martin, Source Jacobs, even Goldstein, you know, is priced 21 points per game less than what he scored in 2015. And I think that probably makes him value. He's only 28 years of age and he's going to clearly hold on to that number one ruck mantle at North Melbourne. But I think you're right. You need flexibility. I think you've got to make a decision whether or not Goldie and Gawn are going to be the standouts this year. And I don't know that it's that simple, even though they look like they might be.
In terms of ruck strategy, I think I approach it from two angles. The first angle is considering that you only have one ruck emergency, and that because clubs only run one, maybe two ruckmen, there's also not many new ruckmen sort of breaking out as rookies year to year. So the fact that it's really difficult to cover rucks makes me look quite seriously at the injury history of a ruckman, and therefore that set and forget's really important in terms of establishing a bit of stability in the rucks, where when you get a short-term injury in the rucks, often it means a donut, not a 50 or a potentially 100 score instead, like you could get in the midfield. So there's that injury sort of stability component. And the second part is the scoring potential, and that's where you're actually looking at, are there two standout blokes right at the top of the tree that if you miss out on, you'd be forfeiting too many points on a week-to-week basis to really contend for, you know, the 50K. So I think the big question isn't necessarily, are there two standout rucks, but what's that difference between the second and third ruck option? So if you have a guy like Gawn that's looking like he can quite comfortably average 115, and then Goldie is potentially a 110 candidate, is there somebody else, potentially a Stefan Martin type, that can match his 110? Because if there's two options that are able to score 110, then all of a sudden the need to go for a set and forget strategy is potentially a little bit lessened, because you have two options to actually choose from. There's no need to sort of lock away one single player because the two standout options. So I guess that's the other thing that I'd be considering, is what's the gap between the second and third ruck option? And is it large enough to sort of force me into two players to lock away right at the get-go? So I think that takes us quite nicely onto the first two players to discuss this week. The first one is Maxi Gawn. A bit of time referencing him already, especially in the first show where we talked about first pick players. Mark, is he locked away in your team at the moment?
Yeah, he is. And I think that everyone got a bit burnt last year by taking Goldstein when he was so expensive. And it could definitely happen again this year with Gawn. He's not guaranteed to average sort of 120 again. And very few super coaches are actually able to maintain that from year to year. Look, I have some concerns with him, and I have some concerns with paying that price for him. But there's no obvious other two candidates that you would take this year. So I think that that means that you just have to pick Gawn and hope he keeps it up. He's a good captaincy option, and he could just burn you too hard if you don't have him.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Mark. I actually, in a sense, don't want to pick a guy who's just had a career best performance by a mile, because I think it's a massive ask to expect him to repeat that. However, he just ticks enough boxes. He's 25. He played every game last year, and possibly argue, believe it or not, that he's slightly underpriced. If you take out his three worst performances last year, he actually averaged 128. We're paying 118.5 for him. So at the moment, I've got him in the team. As Mark says, he's a captain or a vice captain option. There's enough to like about him to fork out the extra coin, but it comes with a risk. I think anytime you pay $645,000 for a guy, it's risky, let's be honest.
I think it's risky, but I think I agree with you both in the sense that he does appear to be the standout option to the extent that you'd be happy to take that risk. And even if he isn't really able to improve to potentially 128, just maintaining 118 would be good enough to lock away as your number one ruck option. To me, this year, it seems like Gawn is the standout top option, and there's a little bit more question marks once you step down to the second ruck. And so I know that Goldstein and Martin are probably the two main contenders for that R2 spot if you're going for a premium set and forget strategy right from the start. But because there's potentially a couple of options that could be worthy of R2, I also know that there are plenty of people considering maybe taking a value option and then trying to pick up a Martin or a Goldstein after they've had a poor game and potentially drop a little bit in price as well. So before we look into the more value options, I think we'll cover off the Goldstein-Martin type option first. So Goldie's the one to start with. Tom McLean asks whether there's concerns about Magic Door taking some time away from him in the ruck. It looks like he'll have a pretty good shot at breaking into that 22 on a consistent basis. So he's been knocking on the door for a little while. Keffer, do you have any thoughts on Magic Door and potential impacts to Goldie's scoring?
Yeah, look, I don't think he'll hurt him too much. Goldie's reasonably effective when he rests forward. And I'm pretty convinced that Goldie's still going to take the lion's share of the ruck duties. Magic will come in and pinch hit, but, I mean, that just gives Goldie a rest, doesn't it? Goldie doesn't have to play 120 minutes of a game to score really well, and I wouldn't be too concerned about Magic taking his points, no.
Mark, is Goldie the standout number two ruckman for you, or do you think there's competition for that R2 spot? How do you rate Goldstein for 2017? Are you tempted to lock him away?
Really, still unsure at this stage, to be completely honest. It's interesting listening back to our season review show, and we're all so certain that we'd be taking Goldstein and Gorn in the ruck, and I think that that might be an indication that it is the way to go. The only real positive thing I have to contribute to that is that he seems to average significantly better in odd years, with 2011, 13 and 15 being very good, so yep.
Yeah.
Don't really believe in that stuff, but I think, look, no, but the thing that worries me is, one, his ankle and his knee injuries. So he was clearly carrying some injuries late last year, which affected his scoring, and the fact that North Melbourne, like, how well are they going to do this year? And when he's scored well, they've been doing at least reasonably well and sort of making finals or being thereabouts as a player, so as a team. So I think that there's going to be less points going to the Kangaroos this year than there has been in the past.
Yeah, look, I'm not a big fan of the ruse, but just priced at 108, he's certainly capable of going better than that. So, you know, he went at 129 2 years ago. Now we can have him priced at 108. It's kind of difficult, if he stays fit, not to see him bridging some of that gap, some of that 20-point gap.
I see Goldie averaging anywhere between 105 and 115 this year. I'm not really able to pick it. And a big reason for that is, as you've mentioned, Mark, North's potential finish this year. If they become a top eight team, you'd obviously be a lot more confident. So because of that, I think my evaluation of Goldstein largely relies upon the fact that there wouldn't be another ruckman that's able to match that, therefore making him a standout number two. If I'm tempted into, let's say, a Stefan Martin potentially breaking out to that 105, 110 bracket, then I think I'm actually much more likely to take the punt and save 100K on Stefan Martin, understanding that I'm not as confident that he'll be the second best scoring ruckman for 2017, but he'd be close enough to Goldstein for me to take the punt value-wise. So I think that's sort of the next player that I want to go to. Stefan Martin averaged 90 last year, had an injury-affected year. His knee, it turns out, was really affecting his lateral movement as well, game to game, causing him a lot of pain and restricting his ability to move around the ground and collect possessions. Thoughts on Martin presenting good value this year at 488,000?
Not a chance, mate. You don't remember what happened last year when I picked Martin? 160 in the first game and then missed the next week and then, like, rucked out with second ruck for the rest of the year.
Is he a never again for you, Mark?
Yeah, look, he is. And I think he's had a season and a half of premium scoring history, and that's it across the 10 or so seasons that he's played. So that's not much to base things on. And I think Brisbane is still going to struggle this year. Are they going to play Archie Smith? And sort of Martin has to be the number one solo ruck if he's going to be scoring well based on what we've seen in the past. So yeah, I think there's too many concerns with Martin, and I think there's some better options out there, Goldstein and Grundy being two of those.
So Grundy then, Mark, you see as a more legitimate contender to take that R2 mantle?
I'd say that he is less of a gamble than Martin. I can see that Martin, based on his history, he does have the potential to average 110 because he's done it before. But is he really likely to do it again? He has had a fair few injuries in his past, so that's another factor. And Brisbane sort of not necessarily improving in my eyes would be a whole range of reasons why Martin is less likely to improve than someone like Grundy, who's coming into their fifth season, played 21 games last year, just destroyed it on the run home last year in the last sort of 10 games, barely scored less than 100. So I know that Grundy is a big gamble, sort of coming off a 95 average and 90 the year before, but there's a natural improvement going on there. The Pies might have a better year. Yeah, I can see more reasons to pick Grundy than I can to pick Martin.
Kefa, any thoughts on Grundy?
I'll just start with Martin, if I might. Oh, yeah. No interest whatsoever. He's in his 10th season. I want a guy who might average, you know, 120 if he really goes nuts. And this is a guy who's never gone better than, I'm just looking at the numbers now, 111.7. He's never played 22 games. He plays for a lowly team. They're a bunch of battlers, Brisbane, with all due respect. Probably the only box that he really ticks. He's priced 22 points per game less than what he performed a couple of years ago. So I suppose if you're searching for a reason to pick him, that might be it. But look, you can say that or say something similar for most of the top picks, and there's just enough question marks there. Not enough scoring history in that really, really truly elite category, and he's had enough cracks at it now to expect him to go career best at 30 years of age in a lowly team with perhaps some little bit of competition there from Smith. It's just, that's an absolute no for me. Moving on to Grundy. Look, Grundy I like a lot more as a pick because with Grundy, you know, he's got his best footy still ahead of him. He's another one he hasn't managed to put together 22 games yet, although he did put together 21 last year. A little bit of a worry that he might have, his ceiling might not yet be high enough. I think I saw the other day maybe his best ever score was like 127. And that's okay for a young bloke, but you look at the Gorns and the Goldies and they can give you 170. So Grundy, I do believe he's got his best footy in him. I just don't know that he's, because he's only about 67 grand cheaper than Goldie, need him to be more like 100 grand cheaper than Goldie, I think, to go there, just because Goldie's got that really more solid scoring history. And I think Grundy's best, I think, would be like 105, you know, which would be 10 points per game better than this year or than last year. So that'd be, you know, a great improvement. Whereas Goldie, I could see going to that 120. This is best case scenario. Just not quite cheap enough for me, Grundy. Probably more of a draft option than a Supercoach Classic option for me.
Yeah, I reckon they're pretty fair points, Kepa.
Yeah, I think the picture you painted sells me quite heavily on Goldstein, because if you're saying that Grundy's top end is 105 and Goldstein's sort of basement's potentially, you know, 105 with a ceiling of 120, you're much more likely to be burnt by Goldstein than Grundy. You know, even scoring 105, losing 10 points of value from your starting pick, that's not going to kill you. But missing out on a player that's scoring 120 every week, that will kill you over the course of the season. So the more and more we're talking about this, the more I'm converging on Goldstein, actually. So do you, Blake, see any other contenders that could sort of step it up to match that Goldstein average?
No, just given what we've seen, there's no evidence that anyone else can actually do that at this stage.
Now, the only other one that, looking at the little spreadsheet I've got in front of me, Sauce Jacobs went at 115.5 points back in 2014. He's only missed four games in the last five seasons, and he is priced at 28 points per game less than his best, which was back in 2014. He's still only 28, and he's 173 grand cheaper than Gorn, but he has gone backwards the last couple of years. He only gave us an 87 last year, but I think that was injury affected. I actually picked him up in the last round or two. I think he went down at quarter time. So he potentially represents value. I think he will improve on 87 points per game, but is he really going to match Goldie and Gorn? I don't think so.
I think when looking at the ruck, something to consider is who the ruckmen are actually tapping to. Sometimes that's actually more important than playing for a top eight or a top four club. I think of all the positions, the ruckman's connection to another player actually matters a lot. An effective tap is 5 points. It's a lot for a rather small action and something that they get lots of opportunities at per game. That can stack up really quickly. Max Gorn and Jack Viney and Nathan Jones, they've got some fair clearance beasts, and he gets a fair few points that way. North Melbourne, despite their lack of ability to maybe score very effectively, they've typically been quite a good clearance team. Cunnington, Swallow, Z-Ball, some really good clearance players. Nick Nat formed a really good relationship with Pritis. Sanderlands, when he was at his peak, together with Nathan Fife and Mundy, were sort of leading the hit out to advantages combo. That's really important, and I think that Jacobs potentially suffers a little bit from Dangerfield just not being there and potentially not winning as many clearances off his taps directly, and that could be a reason for a drop-off. So unless you saw another midfielder maybe stepping up to that level, you know, Scotty Thompson dropping off a little bit, I'd be a bit concerned about him. And that's what has me maybe potentially a little bit more confident in a Brody Grundy type, because they've gone and recruited so many inside midfielders over the last few years. They've got Greenwood and Treloar, they've got Pendlebury, they've got, sure, I'm missing some others there.
Side bottom,
Degowie. They've got so many midfielders in Collingwood that win centre clearances that Grody's points could be uplifted by the pure fact that the midfield's so strong.
Did you just call him Grody?
Grody.
That's a great nickname for Brody Grundy. Grody. That's fantastic.
I'll stick with that for now. Shane Mumford, any thoughts on him?
Not for me. I know that he has the scoring potential there. He has done it in the past. He's had three seasons over 100. Really, really fun to watch when he's in form. But like you sort of said at the top of the show, that you're really looking for durability in your rucks. And he might have played 21 games last year, but that's the most he's ever played in a season. And you just hear from out of GWS that he's really, really managing his body at all times. And I think that'd be pretty keen to see people like Rory Lobb get some more game time in the ruck and develop a little bit. So I think his ceiling's a little bit capped as a result. I did like Kevin's thoughts on Jacobs. I thought that was quite an interesting pick, an interesting alternative. And he definitely had some value and some potential. And I'd definitely pick him ahead of Mumford.
Mummy lacks durability. And as Marcus said at the top of the show, there aren't a lot of emergency options on the ruck bench. I think if you were going to gamble on Mummy, and I wouldn't, but if you were going to gamble on Mummy, you'd have to have some kind of setup where you've got somebody like Patrick Ryder or somebody like that in your forward line who can swing it into your ruck line when Mummy inevitably gets injured.
You did mention Ryder there, Kefa, and that's a good segue for me because that's the player I wanted to go to next. Mark, I know you've been quite attracted to that ruck forward Ryder option so far this preseason. Do you want to expand on your thoughts with Ryder a little bit more in the ruck show?
Sure, mate. I mean, he didn't have the most impressive game. It was a Thursday night they played. He sort of more impressive as a forward than he was throughout the ruck, but I mean, first came back in a couple of years, so I wouldn't be reading too much into that. I wouldn't let that determine your pick. I like the fact that Matthew Lobb is just very, very unlikely to get games. And they've got a bunch of other sort of second ruck players like Trengrove and Westhoff and Dixon. So you would expect that Ryder would play as that number one ruck role. And he has shown that he can average over 100 doing that in the past. Whether you'd pick him in the second ruck position, I guess he's really tricky, especially, I think we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, the round nine bye. I mean, if he's in your second ruck position, you're really going to need cover somewhere because it's full 22 that week. Look, I have cooled probably a little bit on Ryder. Just his sort of upside is probably around 105, and I might want to just temper some of the expectations on these returning Bombers. But look, he's still in consideration, and maybe consideration as a forward as much as a ruck, and I don't hate the value options.
There's a couple of boxes that he ticks. He's cheap. He's 418K. He's priced 28 points per game less than his best in 2012. As you say, Lobby's not much competition. And look, he's 227 grand cheaper than Gawn. But I also worry about him being a little bit rusty on return. And I worry that if you pick him as a ruckman, there's going to be too big a gap in his scoring compared to those two that we talked about at the top of the show. I also think if you were going to pick him, then it's as probably for me anyway, as a forward who can provide relief in the ruck. I can understand the pick from that point of view.
I like that assessment, Kefa. I think I'd need two sort of assessments of the ruck situation for Ryder to qualify to make my starting team. One, not being confident enough of who the second ruck will be for season 2017. So if you're not confident on Goldstein, then you're more likely to pick Ryder. And two, if you think Ryder is good enough to end up as your F6, because ultimately you pick a ruck forward to either be your F6 or F7. So I think at your preseason, not understanding what the injury landscape will be like yet for the season, you have to assume that at the minimum make your F6 and be a keeper. So is he good enough to average enough to make it into the top six forwards? Or be close enough to be in consideration. I think this year, potentially, there's a lot of mid-forwards or midfielders that have moved out of the forward line or no longer available for the forward line this year. And so the ceiling on the forward line seems to have dropped a little bit as well. The nature of the play has seen a little bit more points distributed into the back line over the course of 2016. We saw higher back line scores than we have seen in previous years and lower forward line scores. So I think those factors make me look a little bit more closely at Ryder, but those are all sort of more strategic calls. When I actually look at Ryder as an option, I still remember how he played in 2015, and off those performances, he was on my never again list. So unless I see something really special across this preseason that says, hey, he was away in 2016, he's got this crazy hunger to establish himself as a top ruckman at Port Adelaide because the opportunities are there, unless I see that type of drive, that hunger, and that some sort of conversion to higher scores in the preseason, I'm very unlikely to pick him.
Yeah, so, fair enough.
All right, we'll move on to some slightly cheaper options. Again, if we were to look at potentially going away from Goldstein at R2, I think instead of dropping down to a Martin or Grundy type, which we don't have utmost confidence about, but are priced quite expensively, the other option is to look for more serious value, more extreme value, and Toby Nankervis has been a name that's been tossed around a bit. Played six games with Sydney last year. Looked like he's good enough for AFL level. Moved across to Richmond. My only question is, $366,000, like, is he really good enough to take the risk on? That's a lot of money.
It does seem like maybe $50,000-$60,000 too much. But is he going to score a lot less than Paddy Ryder? That's probably a huge question because, look, he looked pretty good for Richmond the other night and his marking seems quite strong and strong body, and Marek didn't seem like he was really going to threaten him for a position. And I guess it comes down to, is Nankervis going to have the number one ruck role? And if you're going to play 367 for a player and lock him into your second ruck position in your Supercoach team, you probably want more certainty than what we have around the Hampson versus Nankervis decision. Like, you'd hate to pay 360 for a player and then 3 weeks in he gets dropped or isn't playing or he's playing second ruck. I think that would really, really destroy your Supercoach season. So it seems like a good enough player. The role potentially is there, but there's too many doubts on him for me.
No, I don't really understand. Are people picking him as a stepping stone? Is he meant to make a lot of money? Is that the point that he becomes a cash cow? Looking at his numbers here, looking at last year, there's games where he's had 24 hitouts, 15 disposals, kicked a goal, had 3 tackles. The Tigers have won by 70 points, and his Supercoach scores 80. If you look at his scores from last year, 7 scores, 6 of those are between 70 and 88. I just worry that he's going to get stuck in that 70 to 88 kind of no man's land, maybe with the occasional 105. He's only 40K cheaper than Ryder. I think Ryder's a safer option.
Yeah, I think he feels like quite a confused pick where you're looking for value, but you're also looking for ruck forward to provide you flexibility, and then you end up with a subpar player as a result. So I think there's always a temptation to pick strategically in Supercoach or pick a player based on their profile, player that's moved clubs. You know, you can put all these attributes and little stars next to Nankervis, and cumulatively they might look attractive enough, but at the end of the day, you still got to evaluate the player for who he is. And Nankervis, I don't know enough signs point to a breakout year that you'd be confident in him.
I think people might be picking him because they want him to do well, and they'd really love to see a player step up, but no.
Yeah. All right, next question is from at Just5 on Twitter. He's asking about Sandy as potentially that cheaper option. Now, this guy I can see as a more legitimate stepping stone. I don't think any of us would be looking to keep him for the whole year, understanding his age and his injury history in the rucks. But $310,000 for Sandilands is a pretty good value for a bloke that we know as good scoring history, and I think the fact that the third man up is no longer a factor should be of huge help to Sandilands as well.
G'day to Jester, big fan of the show. I know he's pretty active on Twitter as well. This feels a bit like deja vu. Like 2014, we had Sandilands at about this price. We picked him, and he averaged 108 for the season and played 21 games. If that happened again, that'd be bloody great. Is that likely to happen again, given he's 34 years old and has already had a calf injury in the preseason? They're the questions that probably need to be answered around him. And Marcus, when you say that you'd pick him and you wouldn't hope to keep him for the rest of the year, like, if I'm picking Sandilands, I'm hoping to keep him unless he gets injured and hoping that he turns into one of those premium rucks. I'm not sure that it's a good idea. Like if you're looking to upgrade someone in your team, then they should be a rookie that you pick in one position and you're going to upgrade them to a premium at some point, not some mid-pricer that you're looking to like definitely upgrade later on. You're really picking your mid-prices hoping that they're going to turn out to be keepers. And I think that if you're waiting around to find out who the best second ruck person is going to be, that's not a great strategy because there's a good chance one of your rucks is going to be injured at some point, so you can trade into that person if you can, or it's not going to be 100% clear who that person is going to be, or maybe just have a go at picking who you think is going to be that breakout person is going to be yourself. You can definitely understand why people would pick Sandilands, especially if he plays the next 2 weeks in the JLT, or Freo only got one to go. Whatever the case, I can see why people would pick him, but I think you're picking him as a keeper.
Oh, look, if you could get a keeper at $308,000, that's the kind of move that might win you the $50,000, isn't that? Very, very important. If people don't pick him and he becomes a keeper, I think they're really going to be behind the eight ball. So I actually see Sandilands as a really important pick. Whether you get it right or whether you get it wrong could have a big outcome on your season. I think if you pick him, you're crossing your fingers that he's going to become a keeper. And I mean that because of his body. I just don't have a lot of trust in a 34-year-old with a calf. He's got to get on a plane every second week and travel across the Nullarbor to all parts. Hasn't played 22 games since 2008, but he did manage 21 games in 2015 and 2014 and averaged 108 in both of those years. So look, if you could give us anything like that for $308,000 as a starting pick, it'd be fantastic. One thing about him, if I'm going to pick him, I'm going to pick him as a starter. because I don't want to be bringing him in, spending a trade, bringing him in, and then another one getting him out. So if I start him, at least I haven't blown a trade on him. And really, you're just going to keep a trade up your sleeve for a guy like that. You're probably going to anticipate that at some point you're going to have to trade him out. I think if he's fighting fit and he's picked in round one, there's going to be a lot of blokes that pick him.
We've got a question here from David Swizz about Jared Witts. He's priced at $217,000. Do you guys see him getting regular games, having moved over from Collingwood?
All the talk was that he was going to be their number one ruck, and then he's gone and hurt himself in the first JLT game. I think he tore a tendon in his hand and pretty brutal injury. If he was going to play the JLT and show that he had a really, really clear preseason and he was clearly the number one ruck in that team, then I think he becomes part of the conversation, even at that R2 position. Generally, in the past, it's pretty tricky to pick someone like him in at R3 and sort of just sit money there. Look, I think there's enough doubts on what his role is going to be that it'd be very, very difficult to pick him as your second ruck, and which means I think it's probably difficult to pick him at all. Yeah, I guess we've got a few more weeks to think about it, but at the moment he's only on the fringes in consideration for myself.
Yeah, I think there's enough other good options out there not to bother with Witts. He's played 40 games and he's cracked the ton twice. For an extra 100 grand, you can have, or a little bit less, you can have Sandilands, who's got that proven longevity of scoring well.
Any other blokes that you might be considering? Vardy, or we had questions about Tom Boyd and Campbell or Giles at West Coast. Are you considering anybody else, or are your options really quite restricted to the blokes that we've already talked about?
I think we've probably talked about a few more blokes than are actually in consideration for my team. The only spanner that could be thrown in the works is with the rookies. I know I've got Cameron English, and I think there was one other cheap guy that could potentially get a game early on or round one. And if that happens, that could change decision-making. I wouldn't be considering a player like Nathan Vardy, for instance. So, yeah, just probably lock in two of those big premiums or lock in one with Sandilands.
I think the danger with mid-prices that especially might not get games on a continuous basis is if you start them at R2 and you have no ruck emergency, Nathan Vardy gets dropped four games in after poor performance, has only gone up 20,000. Like, what do you do in that situation? Do you downgrade another rookie elsewhere so that you have money to upgrade him to an actual premium? Do you sideswap to another mid-price ruckman who could also get dropped? You're stuck up shits, Craig, almost, and excuse the language, but there's an inherent risk and danger with mid-price ruckman, I think, and it's a trap that I've fallen into in seasons past, and definitely something I recommend our listeners avoiding, because spending four out of, it used to be 20 trades, four out of 20 trades in the ruck has killed me before.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a tendency, if you think about it too long, you can probably overthink it. So I would be encouraging super coaches out there just to keep it simple, think with their head and not their heart. Don't get too caught up in the romantic picks and, you know, guys who might come out and give you some kind of season best performance or, you know, come out of the clouds. Look, it could happen, but it's very hard to pick a player like Witts becoming, or Nankervis becoming, a really valuable player for your team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in probably about a couple of months, we'll probably look back and go, oh, this decision was really, really obvious.
Yeah.
I guess that's what normally happens. But even though it doesn't seem 100% obvious at the moment, my final advice would be take Gornon Goldstein or Gornon Sandilands. Like I said, I like Grundy as a pick, so I'm not going to be offended if you take him. I think he's a pretty decent selection, but one of those first two options seems like the way to go.
Now, I've got one last question to wrap up the Ruck Show. We've had a few blokes look at potentially starting a more expensive emergency option. So not taking a rookie that's likely not to get games, maybe paying for somebody like Witts to sit in your R3 instead. We've talked about this in the past being potentially a hole to just sort of throw money into that you don't get actual scores out of. If you pay $200,000 for Witts and your two ruckmen never really get injured and you never need Witts, or Witts doesn't pan out, you've thrown a fair bit of money sort of in the bin for no reason. But on the flip side, when flipping through the ruck options available last year, I'm not sure if you guys have picked up on this, but I found only one bloke that played 22 games last year, and that's Max Gawn. So
yeah,
in the AFL, the way it is at the moment, if there's no good rookie options to come on across this preseason, would you consider picking Witts or Ryder, or would you insist on setting up some sort of more reliable ruck cover for 2017?
Look, I think that the best way to do that, and I learned this lesson last season, where in the past I've always had a ruck forward rookie in that third ruck spot, and last year I didn't, and it ended up costing me a little bit. I'd make sure that you have a ruck forward in that position just in case you can use it to cover at some point later on. I think that you need certainty on this player that you bring in. Like if you have Witts or Vardy or someone like that sitting in your third ruck position, and that seems pretty risky because they might not be there when you need them. And it could just be the one round that you need them over the course of the year that they're not there, and then it's been a complete waste of having them in that position. So, yeah, I wouldn't be doing it personally.
I'm actually probably, as a result of having had this conversation with you guys today, and probably looking at taking Patrick Ryder in the forward line. I don't really want to take him, but the fact that he offers insurance for when one of my ruckmen get injured and he can swing into that forward line, he's just cheap enough at 418 grand. You'll probably sleep a little bit easier at night knowing that Ryder is there if you need to call on him when Gawn or Goldstein go down.
I think I'm probably going to land somewhere in the middle of both of you. I think I would like to have that ruck forward flexibility, and Ryder would be the bloke to provide that to me. But I think the furthest I'll go is picking a ruck forward R3. When my player does get injured and is missing for that round, at least it gives me the flexibility of trading in Ryder that round, pivoting him into the rucks and then putting him in. If I was confident in Ryder's ability as a permanent F6, I'd pick him. But Mark especially knows this of me and my selections over the past few years. I often fall into the trap of picking an MPP player because I like the flexibility, and a lot of the times taking a hit in player and scoring quality as a result. I'm conscious of not doing that this year, so I wouldn't want to pick Ryder up again if he's only going to average 85, which he has done for me in seasons past. But what I will do is make sure I have a ruck forward rookie at R3 to be able to pivot a ruck forward in case of injury. Last year, I think that was a mistake that we both reflected upon, Mark. We just picked the cheapest ruck rookie that was going to play on Sundays a lot of the time to give us the most opportunities to loophole. I'll still try and pick a player that plays on Sundays, but definitely the focus will be picking an actual ruck forward rookie.
Luckily, Strandica, I think his name is, from Fremantle, fits those roles. I'm tempted to take someone like Cameron from the Swans, though. If he's actually going to play games, that might tempt me a little bit more than just picking an R forward link that's not going to play at all.
Yeah, look, I think Mason Cox showed last year that it's probably worth picking a guy who may actually get a game, because he actually turned out to be quite useful. And Marcus, the point you make about just having that flexibility there to pick up Ryder if and when you actually need him is probably actually better than starting him, and it's probably what I will do. So thank you for the advice.
Any other comments to wrap up the show? Otherwise, I think that answers most of my questions, and actually, it's been pretty productive. I think my focus has narrowed a lot going through this exercise with you blokes.
No more comments for me, man. I did have a feeling that when you talked about it with a bunch of other people, it might come out that Goldstein Gawn is probably the more obvious option to go with, and that seems to have played out.
Yep, and for me, I'd be putting them in order of Goldstein and Gawn together. I'd prefer Gawn, but he's more expensive, so I'm going to put Gawn and Goldstein on the top line, and then I'm going to put Sanderlands, if he's fit, underneath that with Grundy. They're the guys that I'd be considering.
Alrighty then, I think that's a good place to finish up the show. Next week, we'll come back with the backline show. The week after that, the forward line show. And then only 1 week after that, rookies and recap, and we're into lockout already. So not long left. Hopefully, these podcasts are helping you make up your mind about how your team's shaping up. And thanks very much for joining us again, Keffer. And hopefully, we get you on again another time later on in the season.
Thank you for having me, Marcus and Mark, and good luck to everybody for their 2017 Supercoach season.
Don't forget, if you want to pick our brains or have a chat to Keffer maybe because you like his advice, supercoachcoach.com.au/forums. Keffer's very active on there. I'm sure he'll be very approachable if you have some follow-up questions to his advice. And don't forget, patreon.com/supercoachcoach to support the show. That's it from us for this week. We'll catch you again next week for the Backline Show. Thanks again, Kef. See you all next week. Bye.
Go Bombers.
Go Bombers.